Well, good morning, Heartland. How's everybody doing? Y'all doing good today? Good. Well, I'm excited to be here with you. We are, as Brian just said, we're finishing up our series on Proverbs this morning. My name is Chris. I'm one of the pastors here. And we have been talking about a lot of great stuff through Proverbs, and there's so much more there. So I encourage you to read the book of Proverbs if you can. It's just filled with so much practical wisdom. And the definition we've been using for wisdom over these last few weeks is wisdom is not just what you know. What you know is important, but if you don't do anything with it, it's not worth much. So wisdom is not just what you know, it's what you do with what you know. And so we've been talking about learning how to apply God's truth to the real and complex areas of our daily lives. We got one last one to look at this morning. We're going to be looking at something every one of us deals with every single day, and that is our relationships. Your relationship in your marriage, with your children, with your friends, your coworkers, with whoever else, your neighbor. We all have different relationships. And believe it or not, your relationships can make or break you. If your relationships are healthy, they can bring you so much joy and fulfillment. But if your relationships are unhealthy or they're broken, they can make you absolutely miserable. My kids love Play-Doh. And when we get the Play-Doh out, they come running and they have this idea of this perfect masterpiece. And they go to town molding and shaping and cutting and tweaking and just trying to get every little thing right. And in their minds, they're looking for something kind of like this. And we'll put these pictures up on the screen. Like, to me, that's amazing. I didn't know Play-Doh could do that. But the thing up there says Play-Doh, so I guess it can. But our kids have this masterpiece in their mind. Let's put the next one up. And they're just shaping and molding. And they're trying to get these creations in there to get them just right. And that's phenomenal. I'm guessing that's 6 inches tall, but it looks really big. All right, let's do the one last one. I don't know if it said it was Play-Doh. What do y'all think? I don't know. That's pretty incredible. If that's Play-Doh, like, that's a different kind of art form right there. But these masterpieces, that's what you know, we're going for. If you really know what you're doing with Play-Doh, you can get a masterpiece. But with my kids, what happens is they start out with that, I want this masterpiece, and you give it a few minutes, and then it turns into they're just having fun making a huge mess. And then it tends to typically look a little bit like this. And that's a little bit more real life, right? Every color just becomes this one gray blob. Like, I can't stand it. I'm a little bit OCD, and I like my colors to not be mixed like that. But the issue, though, is our relationships can be a lot like Play-Doh, right? I mean, we come to the table with these dreams and these expectations and these hopes about what our relationships are going to be like. Maybe you're newlywed and you come and you're thinking, man, our life together is going to be so incredible. Or you're pregnant and you're having a boy or a girl soon and you have all these dreams and hopes. This is what life is going to look like. I'm so excited. Or you meet a new friend. Man, this is going to be incredible. This friend is so amazing. But the reality is that while they can be so good, relationships can get messy really, really quickly. And for some of you this morning, maybe it's one of your relationships that's a little bit messy, or maybe it's all of them, and you can't seem to figure it out. You can't seem to get the things working like they're supposed to, and it's just one big mess. But there's this truth that we need to understand that is so helpful. And the more counseling that I do with people, the more I realize people just don't believe this. But relationship mess is a two-way mess. It's a two-way mess. Whatever it is, no matter what the situation, no matter what's happened, it's always a two-way mess because even if you're not the one who's done something, you're not the one who's wronged somebody, our hearts are never as innocent and simple as we'd like to think that they are. And as crazy as other people can be, and they can be crazy, in my relationship mess, I am most likely bringing some of the mess into it. And it's really important to understand that. One of the worst things we can do is convince ourselves that we are innocent, that we aren't guilty, and that it's their fault. They're what's wrong with this. If they would change, everything would be fine. And I know that that sounds okay. Like, we can make ourselves be like, but that's kind of true. But it's never true. Because it's never that simple. Relationships are way too messy for it to be that simple. So what can we do with this messiness in our relationships? Are we stuck with it? Like we said, relationships honestly can make or break you. But what if there was a way to put that mess to rest? What if there was a way to really see less messiness and more joy and fulfillment in your relationships? Well, believe it or not, the book of Proverbs actually spends a lot of time talking about the messiness of relationships and how to work through them. And I was amazed when Brian mentioned to me about doing this message. I was like, I don't think the Bible has a whole lot to say about it. And so I was like, I'm nervous about writing a message if the Bible doesn't say it. But the more I studied Proverbs, do you know what I found? Apparently, people don't change a whole lot over thousands of years, because the same stuff that we struggle with and the same things that make our relationships difficult and messy are the same things that are all over this Bible. And it is amazing, since the beginning of time, since God created man, people are just good at making messes with their relationship. But the Bible is a great book about redemption and how to find healing. And so there, it speaks to us this morning of a way to put the mess to rest. I don't know a ton about cars. I know how to change my oil and do some basic maintenance. But when something's really broken on my vehicle, I can pop the hood and look around, but I have no clue what most of that stuff does. That's why I try to know people that do. But I have no clue. And I think a lot of times in our relationships, something breaks down and we're like, what is going on? What is happening? And we pop the hood and we have no clue what we're looking at. Because so many times it's like you're looking at something we just don't understand. What went wrong? Why is this happening? How do we fix it? And so before we jump into the steps we're going to look at this morning, there's four of them, we need to lay a little foundation for why relationships can be so messy. Why are they so difficult? Why is it so easy to make a mess of them? Well, there's this one thing that the Bible talks about a lot. I mean, a whole lot. And there's this one thing that is at the root of all of our problems. All of your relationship trouble boils down to this one word. I love the way this particular pastor described it, so I'm just going to read his quote. It's the one thing that keeps you from celebrating other people's success. It's the one thing that keeps you from initiating an apology when you know that you're wrong. It's the one thing that keeps you arguing your point even when you know you don't really have a good point. It keeps you from admitting you've lost. It keeps you from admitting weakness. It keeps you from admitting you need help. It keeps you from admitting you don't know what you're doing, even though everyone around you knows you don't know what you're doing. It keeps you from being honest with yourself. It keeps you from being honest with others. It keeps you from learning new things because you want the people around you to think you know everything. It causes you to power up when you should be opening up. It causes you to feel good when others fail. It causes you to lie about your past. It causes you to have the final word. And it keeps you focused on yourself, mostly. Do you know what this one thing is? There you go. There you go. It's pride. You know why you know what it is? Because every one of us deals with it. Every one of us, and that list falls in there somewhere. Everyone, probably already this morning, every one of us falls into that list. Because pride is this ever-present enemy that is always walking with us, that's always trying to distort the way that we think, distort the way that we act towards people. It's been here since the beginning in the fall in Genesis chapter 3. That's what came into the world, was pride. And it's been here ever since, and it is so destructive to our words, to our thoughts, and to our actions, that it can destroy our relationships. Listen to this. Proverbs 13:10 says, where there is strife, where there is conflict, where there is quarrel, where there is relationship trouble, there is what? Pride. It is that simple. It's that one thing that is at the root of every other issue you have. It's pride. Now, here's the thing about pride, is that it leads us to a backwards way of thinking. What I mean is, we were designed by God to be selfless, not to dwell on ourselves, not to think about ourselves, but to really find our joy and happiness in the joy and happiness of other people. And when you find your joy and happiness in others and they find theirs in yours, there's this beautiful cycle that happens. And that's when relationships are not messy and they're beautiful just the way God's made them to be. But here's what pride does, is it comes in and it distorts that. And it blinds us, and it changes the way that we think so that we can't see someone else's perspective. We only see our own. And what we start to crave is our own happiness at the expense of everybody else. And it leads to all kind of destruction. But we need to get serious about attacking pride. If we're going to get rid of this relationship mess, it's going to have to be a proactive attack on pride. God, I want to get rid of pride in my life. I don't want it to have any say. I don't want it to have a rule in my heart. I want to get rid of it. I want to see it broken. And that's something the Spirit of God does over time as we apply the gospel more and more. It makes us humble people even in our relationships. So that's what we're going to do with these Proverbs this morning, is we're going to walk through them and see how the gospel shapes them and shapes us to where we can put the mess to rest, okay? So here's four steps, kind of four components to how to put the mess to rest. Number one is get off the high horse. I've always loved that expression, get off the high horse. Run away from superiority. This is starting with pride. One thing that always hurts our relationships is when we allow pride to puff us up to the point where we look down on other people, when we look down at the people around us. And this is subtle. Like, nobody ever says, like, I want to be, like, puffed up with pride and look down on people. But it happens without us even noticing, and that's the dangerous thing about pride. It happens when you have a mindset that says, I'm not as bad as they are. You know it's happened when you say, I can't believe they do that. I would never do that. And in your mind, it's like, well, that's not that big a deal. But what happens is we start to slowly elevate ourselves and say, I would never do that. I'm not like that person. I would never go there or do that or say that. I can't believe they did that. If people like them were fixed, the world would be a better place. And do you hear the spirit behind that? It's a spirit of pride that says, I'm not the problem. Everybody else is. Proverbs 11:12 says, whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense. It's just good wisdom right there. Whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent. The word belittle there literally means to see someone is smaller than yourself. To look down on someone, to see someone is less than you are. Now, if you feel that way about somebody, what kind of things do you think you're going to be likely to do? Probably talk about them behind their back. Hey, so-and-so did this. Listen, let me tell you the story. Tell you what they did. Why would you tell someone about what someone's done to you unless there was maybe some gratification in there to get someone on your side to say, yeah, that jerk, I can't believe they did that. And that's exactly what you were looking for. That made you feel good to hear someone else call them a jerk for what they did to you, didn't it? And so that's where that pride is starting to divide us and make us act against people. Maybe you give them the cold shoulder. Maybe I'm just going to avoid them. I'm not going to talk to them. I'm not going to text them. Or I'm not going to put punctuation in my text messages. That's me. Y'all probably don't know what that means. I put punctuation in every text message, and so if you don't put it in my text messages, I'm like, something must be wrong. Side note, sorry. So, or wish they could get what they deserve. Wish they could get what they deserve. I mean, this is really something. Someone does something to you, and how often do we tend to just have this desire of like, man, I hope they get that too. Man, I hope I can pay them back or something can happen to them. It's that desire there, belittling them. Constantly thinking about how bad or how wrong they are, just replaying it in your mind. Like, rather than letting it heal and moving on from it, you just keep bringing it back up. I just can't believe it. I just can't stop thinking about it. I can't get it out of my head. And all of this is a kind of ill will that comes from letting ourselves think we're above someone in a relationship. Now, here's the thing that this proverb says, if we can put that verse back up. So if you look at this, it says, whenever someone looks down on his neighbor, they lack sense. So what actually happens when someone looks down, when we look down on another person, is we put ourselves in a judgment seat. We put ourselves above them in a judgment seat. Now, the reason that Solomon says that lacks sense is because there's only one judge. There's only one person who can actually be a righteous and good judge, and that's God. And so what happens is when we put ourselves in that place, we ignore the fact that we are human beings just like everyone else, that we are sinners just like everyone else, that we have the same problems that everyone else has. And when I become a judge to the point where I think I'm above someone, I've lost my grip on reality. That's what Solomon is saying here. So here's step one for getting rid of the mess in your life. Step one is start with grace, stay with grace, and finish with grace. We have to fight so hard to keep our sense, fight to see that we are not better even than the worst sinners, that we all come into these relationships broken, that I'm a sinner, my wife is a sinner, and my kids are sinners. So when we're in a house together, what am I going to expect to see? Perfection? Absolutely not. I'm going to see a lot of things and experience a lot of things that are not always right, that hurt, and they're going to experience the same thing. But we're a work in progress, but we come to it with this understanding that we need to see each other not through eyes of perfection. If you want perfection, look to Jesus. We need to see each other through eyes of grace. That we are all in the same boat together. Now, it doesn't mean that you excuse what people do or that they're right for hurting you, but that does mean that we need to be very careful not to let pride well up in us to where we want to get back at them and attack them, those kinds of things. So how can we really resist the temptation to superiority? We need to behold Jesus. We need to behold the majesty of Jesus and what he's done in the gospel. And what I mean is when you have a problem with pride, we run back to the cross and we see the Son of God who had every reason to be exalted and to think that he is above everybody because he actually is. But he laid all his glory aside and he came to this earth. He humbled himself, Philippians tells us, and he went to a cross for you and for me. And we see that Jesus, to love us, was willing to lay himself down, even though we didn't deserve that. And that, when you are transformed by that, that will break the pride in your life. When the Son of God humbled himself for me, how can I not humble myself for my family, for my spouse, for my kids, for my friends, for my neighbors, for my coworkers? Number two, setting others free sets you free. Setting others free sets you free. Here's what happens if we don't deal with our pride. We'll end up holding on to things. We'll end up keeping people in our debt. And this can make a really big mess. This can turn into grudges. It turns into bitterness. And the book of Hebrews says, don't even let there be a root of bitterness, because the smallest little bitterness, pride takes it and it grows it up into this enormous forest of hate in our hearts. So much can happen so quick, and it can make us and everyone else miserable. There's two Proverbs I want to draw your attention to. 24:17, Proverbs 24:17. It says, do not rejoice when your enemy falls. Let not your heart be glad when he stumbles. Proverbs 24:29. Do not say, I will do to him as he has done to me. I will pay the man back for what he has done. The point of these proverbs is very simple. Setting others free sets you free. Why not rejoice when they get what they deserve? Why not pay them back for what they've done? Because refusing to forgive in our relationships enslaves us. You may think that you're winning when you refuse to forgive somebody, but you're locking yourself up in a prison. It may feel right to hold on to this and to not let it go, to not let them off the hook, but it's poison. Proverbs 17:9. It says, whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. Whoever covers an offense seeks love. Now, what that doesn't mean is sweeps it under the rug and just ignores it. Doesn't deal with it, just puts it away like it never happens. That's not real forgiveness if it's just you're just ignoring it. Because eventually, if you stuff enough stuff down, what's going to happen? It's going to come back out, right? What this verse is talking about is it's the idea of going out to dinner with someone. And after you've eaten, they bring the bill and someone takes the bill and says, no, I've got this. Don't worry about it. You don't owe me anything. I got this. It's on me. That's the picture here. Whoever covers an offense seeks love. Whoever is really going to forgive a person has to do this. They have to take what's been done to them, and you can do two things. You can either give it back to them, which you pay them back. That is not forgiveness. That's vengeance. That's retribution. That's justice. Or you can keep it on yourself, and you can bear the debt on yourself. And that is what real forgiveness is it's giving them a clean slate, and it is bearing what they deserve by not giving it to them. You're giving them grace and withholding what they actually deserve. But how on earth is that actually possible? I mean, how can you really do that? How can you just take what they've done and absorb that debt? Well, the key here is the gospel. Because the gospel says that we sinned over and over and over again in all kinds of different ways, but God did not give us what we deserved. He forgave us. Now, what's really important to understand is why God forgave us. He didn't forgive us because we promised just not to do it again. He didn't forgive us because we said we'll make it up to him. It's not because of anything we did. God forgives us because Jesus Christ said, I'll take the bill. I'll take the debt. I'll take what they've stored up as wrath. I'll take that so that they can have a clean slate, so that they can go free and that they can be reconciled. And when you really believe that, when you really believe that Jesus has taken your debt completely away from you and he has forgiven you and that is real in you, then we never have the right again to look at another person and say, I can't forgive them because they don't deserve it. Of course they don't deserve it. That's what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is always built on grace. If we're going to forgive people, we have to understand, we have to experience over and over and over that grace of God. And the more real it becomes our heart, the more power we will find to forgive in our relationships. And when you can forgive in your relationships, when you can get rid of that mess of holding on and being bitter and holding grudges, you will be set free. If you can get pride out of your mind and quit believing the lies, it will set you free to set them free. And that is just the truth of the Bible, that when we set others free, it sets us free. So the first two steps that we need to work on to get rid of the mess are get off the high horse, run away from pride, and we need to set others free to be free. So refuse to be a person that holds on to things. Number three, overcome evil with good. Now, if we want to be people in our relationships that break this cycle of messiness, and it is a cycle that just keeps on going. If we don't break it, it just keeps on going from one relationship to the next. We have to look at our hearts, which is what we did the first two steps. Have to look at your heart and see what's going on the inside of you. But then we have to work on our actions, and that is where Proverbs 25, 21, and 22 comes in. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. Let me just say, to not give somebody what they deserve is not natural. So I have a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old. And I did not have to teach them how to repay evil for evil. So I can hear them down the hallway. You hear this, ow, she hit me. Oh, he hit me. And it just goes back and forth. And they do this all the time. It's because in their minds, there's something natural in them that says, if someone does it to you, do it right back to them. That's the way the world works. But what we want to do is come in and say, no, 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 no. That's that vicious cycle. That just keeps it going. That keeps the mess there. That keeps relationships falling apart all over the place. We want to come in and say, no, there's a better way. There's a way that grace speaks in, and that's that we can overcome evil. We can break the cycle with good. So I can guarantee that if you give people exactly what they deserve, if you give them what they gave you, the cycle of pride will always continue. But if you can learn to treat people kindly and graciously and humbly, even when they don't deserve it, it is amazing to watch what can happen in your conflict and in your relationships, to watch that mess go away. You can see real change happen. And that's what this verse is saying. It's saying when you serve people, even though they don't deserve it, when you keep your cool instead of blowing up on them, when you forgive them instead of resenting them, when you bless them instead of cursing them, it has the power to transform those relationships. The end of this verse right here says, for you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. This is an old Egyptian practice where they would go with a basket of hot coals to the person that they had wronged. And it was a symbol when they went to him to say that I am so torn up over this. It is eating me alive. I'm on fire because of what I've done to you. Will you please forgive me? What Solomon's saying here is that when you can break that cycle, when you can love people, even when they're unlovable, something can happen in them. And you can begin to see change where you thought change wasn't possible. Now, here's the thing. We can't change other people. Like, I can't determine what someone's going to say or do to me today, but I can do something about what I'm going to do to them. You can control your response to the people and to the relationships that you have. You can control what you do back, and so start by overcoming evil with good. And that's exactly what God has done for us, to change our lives, to reconcile us. What God did is when we ran away from him, he ran after us. He didn't quit. He didn't say, go, I don't care. He pursued us. When we hated God, what did he do? He loved us. When we did everything wrong and did everything we wanted to do and nothing that he wanted us to do, God still loved us and gave us grace. And he proved once for all at the cross that there was nowhere we could go that was too far. There was no evil that was too great. There was no darkness that was too powerful that he couldn't set us free from. He said that he would go to whatever limits to set us free, to make us his. And he overcame sin and death to break that cycle of pride in us so that we could be set free and reconciled to him. So overcome evil with good. Be a person who says, I'm not going to continue the cycle. Yes, it hurts when they say those things. Yes, it hurts when people do those things to me. I'm not going to keep the cycle going. And it's so hard because pride in you is going to tell you, no. You don't need to break the cycle, they do. It's their fault. And this is where we've got to be, we've got to have something stronger than just our will. We've got to have the gospel empowering us and helping us think rightly and clearly about what's really going on and to see, know that that is a lie that says, act on my pride, that says, get my way, that says, pay them back. But by grace, Jesus, let me be set free to begin to live this out and to overcome evil with good in my relationships. So if you have worked on getting off the high horse, and you're attacking pride, running away from that, you're working on forgiveness, and you're working on those things in your heart, you're overcoming evil with good, and really looking inside of you to get your heart right, then we come to the fourth one. And it's only when you do all those things that you're ready. Because the fourth one is confront in love. Because relationships can be messy, there's going to be times when you have to confront. You can't just sweep stuff under the rug. You can't just say, well, I forgive you. Let's not talk about that. I mean, there's going to have to be conversations, hard conversations. There's going to have to be real moments where you deal with stuff with like, hey, that's not okay. Being gracious does not mean that you pat someone on the back and be like, it's okay. You can be serious and still be kind. So in order to confront in love, we've got to deal with pride. Because what's going to happen if you're filled up with resentment and ill will, and this anger of what they've done to you? How are you going to respond? Hey, let's have a conversation about what you did to me. I'm feeling not prideful. You know, like, no, it's going to come out very badly. I've tried to do that. When I'm angry with someone, it is very hard to have a conversation that ends well. So I tend to try to take the practice of if I'm upset, like I'm going to take a breath and not talk at all. Like I need to cool down because I want to have my heart ready before we deal with this relationship. How many times have we said something when we weren't ready to deal with the relationship and we spoke out of pride and damaged the relationship? Or what they did to us, we did it right back and it just kept dividing the relationship. I mean, you look at marriages 5 years down the road where somebody's like, this is awful. How did we get here? You look at people who haven't talked to their kids in 10 years and say, how did this happen? How on earth did we get here? How is this so messy? What on earth happened? And it goes back to not taking care of pride. And so we didn't know how to handle and deal with the difficult stuff of life. So we deal with our hearts first, and then when we're ready, and only when we're ready, we confront in love. So Proverbs 27, verse 5 and 6, says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. And faithful are the wounds of a friend, but profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Better is an open rebuke than hidden love. If we really care about people and our passion and our desire is really to see one another grow and become more like Jesus, then that means dealing with the hard things. It means dealing with them, though, the right way and learning how to do it in a godly way. And here's the thing. Godly relationships are built on an understanding that we're all sinners. So when you come into a marriage, this is funny. I think about my own marriage. When you come into a marriage with two sinners, they have so many dreams and expectations. Man, this is going to be great and this and that. But then you have two sinners that live together constantly all the time. And what happens is sinners sin. I don't know if you knew that. Sinners sin. And as they do that, man, it wears them out. And they don't know how to deal with it because it surprises them. People are going to let you down. You're going to let other people down. Like we said earlier, we're not ever going to be able to give perfection to anyone. Only Jesus can do that. And so in these relationships, we come understanding these are broken relationships that need grace. And godly people understand because they need grace, that means I'm going into this relationship assuming they're probably going to hurt me. They're probably going to do something and not deserve for me to continue this relationship. But I'm going to, because a godly relationship is built on grace from beginning to end. It's learning to be more like Christ. It's learning to say, I'm not okay staying in the mess, but I'm going to work through it with you. I'm not going to give up on you. I'm not going to just run away when it gets hard. I'm not just going to say, this thing's broken, let's throw it away and get a new one. And the reason I'm not going to do that is because Jesus didn't do that to me. I was broken, and he should have got a new one, but he didn't. And I'm still broken, but he still doesn't throw me away. And Jesus will never tell you that he's done with you. You'll never hear the words, I quit, from Jesus. And because he never quits on me, it fills me with something that is bigger than me. And it allows me to go to my relationships with patience and forgiveness and grace that's not my own, but it's supernatural because it's Christ in me. And it allows me to begin to end this cycle of messiness and to confront what's really going on and to really start moving this thing towards the way God has designed it. But it all goes back to Jesus, every step of it. Romans 8:32 says, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? Here's what that verse promises, is that Jesus proved once and for all that he put the ultimate mess to rest. Your mess of sin and guilt and shame, he nailed it to the cross and he put it to rest so that it would never come back to you, that you would be set free from it. And he said, if I've done that, then I care about your relationship right now. And so maybe you're here this morning and your marriage is on the edge and you're saying, I don't know how we can ever come back from this. I want you to hear the gospel this morning. Jesus said, if I put your ultimate mess to rest, I can put the mess to rest in your marriage. And I can bring this thing around and I can transform it. And you say, I don't know how we can ever work through this situation and this friendship. That just, it hurts so bad. Jesus saying, trust that I'm enough for you. I can bring something into this relationship that you don't have. I can bring the power to forgive, and I can bring grace, and I can bring everything you need to see redemption and to see healing. There is no situation, and I believe this with all my heart, there is no situation that God can't redeem. If we can get pride to shut its mouth and listen to Jesus, there is no situation that is hopeless. And I hope you believe that this morning, that there is a better word to speak over your life than I'm just a mess. Jesus said, I put that mess to rest so I could change everything. And when we give our lives to him, that's exactly what he does, even in our relationships. Let's pray together. Father, thank you this morning that even though I am a giant mess, that you love me and you're changing me. God, thank you don't quit on us. Thank you that you don't leave us. Thank you that even though we fail and we fail and we fail, Lord, you are constant. Lord, and you give us grace and you love us. Lord, I pray over our relationships, God, that you would help us become people who put these principles into practice. Break pride in us. God, root the gospel so deep in us that it changes everything. God, we continue to seek you. You are enough this morning. Help us to believe no situation is hopeless when we give it to you. So no matter where we are, God, that's what we want to do in this moment, is surrender to you. And it's in Jesus' name we pray.